Welcome back, folks. Michael Heck at work again. Can't wait to see how he ties this song into much of anything that we're going to talk about today. But nonetheless, Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc., welcome to the show.
Thank you, Newell. Yeah, this one was a little bit of a stretch. I was thinking about the infrastructure bank that we signed into law yesterday with the governor. And so I was thinking building and then songs about building. And this one came to mind. It's okay. It's there. It's not that compelling of a, you know, of a theme song. But you see what I was trying to do.
Do you remember who sang that song?
Oh, man. We built this. It wasn't Jefferson or Jefferson Starship, was it?
Yeah, it was Starship. Yep, you're right.
Okay.
Starship. You know who wrote that song?
No. Who?
Bernie Taupin.
Huh. That's really interesting. So where does your, like, Starship...
The only reason I know this is I came across a Billboard article not long ago, and I couldn't remember who actually sang that song. And so I clicked on it, you know, one of these alerts, and it was Starship. And then they talk about how Bernie Taupin, when he was living in L.A. at the time, it was a song about killing. It was I don't remember what the song was about now. It was something unique that was going on in L.A. at the time. I can't remember.
Yeah, and then remind me, this is the one that always, this is really, I know we're going right to the issues that your listeners care about the most. Remind me, so there
was... Rock and roll, absolutely.
There was Starship, which came from Jefferson Starship, but then what was Jefferson Airplane?
I don't remember all of the connections. There is some connection, but I don't remember them all, and I may be wrong on that, too.
It was
performances
in Los Angeles.
Lost in the 80s. Okay, well, we'll come back after the break with this one. Okay, sorry. Nothing but the news.
We'll do a little Google searches. All right, so let's talk about this infrastructure bank we have here in Louisiana. Actually, did they ever create the one at the federal level that they were trying to do for so many years?
Yeah, I don't believe that there is a federal one that we have right now, which is one of the reasons that the states have kind of had to go and do this on their own. This is an exciting. We signed this into law yesterday with the governor and Secretary Lede and Chairman, the chairman of the committee. And what's great about this is that this is going to give rural communities ability to get financing that they wouldn't otherwise have to do infrastructure projects, bridges, roads, water systems. It can also serve as the gap financing if larger cities need a little more money to get things done. And what's interesting about this program is that it not only will be public money, will not only be state money, but private investors can invest as well. And actually, the genesis for this idea came from a trip we took last year to Australia. And we were talking to organizations there like Macquarie, and they were saying, if you guys had a vehicle, we'd be interested in investing in Louisiana. And so we did some research. We found about 15 other states in the country that have infrastructure banks, and that's what this one was modeled on.
Yeah. This was bannered about, I know, at the federal level for a long time, and a lot of folks, I wasn't sure if they ever got it through, but a lot of folks really thought, much like you're saying, is that this was an opportunity lost when they weren't able to deliver it, you know, which would provide that sustenance and financing for mostly the rural areas, the suburban areas to urban centers, who get the lion's share of the transportation dollars now, right?
Yeah, that's right. And if you think about this on a global competitive nature, you know, everybody who we're competing with, first and foremost, China, basically has state-supported companies and state-supported infrastructure. So for us to say that we are not going to support the private sector and we're not going to support economic development using all of our publicly available tools just puts us at a competitive disadvantage. So I really like this. I know that the folks in Australia who have $1.5 trillion to invest in the U.S. are excited about this. And if you look forward in our pipeline, where I think LED has announced like over it was $107 billion in projects over the past 2 years, we're simply going to need a lot of build out to go along to make these projects come to life. And so this is going to be a tool. And I also like this, Newell, in that there was so much Sturm und Drang this session, so much heat. it's nice to know that out of that heat, there's also some light. There's also some really reasonable bipartisan solutions like the infrastructure bank that that came out as a result.
No doubt. Let's pivot to small business. New Orleans ranks second among mid-sized U.S. cities for support. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so this is one of those ones that came across my desk, and Matt gave it to me, and I said, oh, that's nice. Is it real? And he said, well, it's real-ish, and that's kind of our standard here at GNO Inc. You know, we're not – we don't let the
No one can attack us on making a statement.
No, we're economic developers. We're not designing O-rings for rockets. And so we have a expression here is something directionally correct. And so this one, when you look at the, right?
Okay, go ahead.
So this one is, I looked at the criteria for this.
City on rock. I'm sorry.
We built this city on robust facts and objective analysis. Business density, we're home to over 11,000 small businesses. That's true. We've got a real rich small business culture. We've got a very high degree of customer engagement. So our shops get more reviews than typical shops around the country. And we also have very favorable commercial rents compared to other cities. We have a high degree of walkability. And so when you look at these factors, which seem like reasonable subjective factors, we score quite high. Lexington, Kentucky was one. Other top 10 included Cleveland, Ohio, Cincinnati, Ohio, Arlington, Virginia, Orlando, Florida, St. Paul, Minnesota. So, yeah, you know, it's a nice one. And as a recovering small business person myself, I always think it's nice to put out some positive news about our entrepreneurs and small business owners.
Yeah, actually, now that you've explained it, it makes sense. I mean, you know, when you think about it, it's funny. You go to Baton Rouge and you're going to see like a whole bunch of chain restaurants, right?
Oh, man.
You come to New Orleans and you ask yourself, and it might be one or two that you actually really like and enjoy. And you say, I wonder why they never come to New Orleans. And it's because we have so many other types of small family-owned restaurants that they don't want to compete against.
Yeah, to me, Magazine Street in New Orleans is one of the greatest urban shopping streets in the country. And mm-hmm. one of my favorite dates for my wife and I is that we start at the top up by the park, and we just kind of eat and drink and window shop our way all the way down, into the CBD. And it's got a great diversity. You've got, you know, local places that are now nationally renowned, like De Cardinola, which was just voted, I think, fourth best restaurant in the country. You've got some chains, and that's fine. You know, there's the mix. But, so I think that the ranking, although at first you kind of look at it, I think that it makes sense. And plus, it's a ranking that ranks us highly. So I commend this ranking to everybody. I think this is a highly robust methodology. It's basically bulletproof.
He's on a roll today, folks. Let's talk about Port Nolan, the Public Belt Railroad, another great partnership that's created.
So this is a nice story. So there's this company, UTC Transoceanic. It's a new company. Our friend Greg Rusevich is involved with it. But basically, they're working together now with the port and the Public Belt to deploy an AI rail clearance technology. So what this means is that traditionally, if you had oversized cargo, like the type of cargo that we were going to be putting into an AI center or one of our big industrial facilities we're building, like Hyundai, you would have to sit down with engineers and look at studies and look at maps and basically figure out if the load was going to make it, you know, past the clearances. You had to make sure that you could make the curves, that there weren't any obstructions in terms of overpasses. What this new technology does is it basically creates a live digital replica of the entire Public Belt network. And so it'll tell you in seconds instead of in weeks whether you can handle this load. So in terms of making us more efficient, it's going to be a major step forward. And of course, what I love about this is that it takes a traditional strength, which is our six Class 1 railroads, and combined it with AI. And that's, I think, indicative of what we're seeing across Louisiana, where traditional industries like maritime are being combined with cutting-edge technologies like machine learning and drones and autonomy, and this is how we're moving into the future.
And again, it highlights the importance of this connection between the port and having a position in the rail side as well, right?
Yeah, it all works together. In terms of intermodal connectivity, we're probably best in the country, which also underscores that it does not make sense that we are not leaders in transportation and trade. We should always be the tops, but I think what happened is for generations, Newell, we kind of suffered from the curse of riches. We figured that because of our railroads, because of our river, neither of which God is making anymore, that we were always going to be number one in trade. And as a result, places that had less, like Houston and Atlanta and Mobile, have worked harder and outbuilt us. So now with the new facility that we're doing down in Violet, we're again, I think, going to reassert our trade leadership along with our railroads.
I talk about this all the time. Things don't just happen. You got to make them happen, right? I mean, there has to be intentionality. There has to be this convergence of effort by multiple people to make it happen, because it's not just going to happen.
The Houston had to dredge the canal. They had to create the shipping canal. They did it. Port of Mobile, 20 years ago, Newell, it was just a sleepy coal and timber port. But then because of the leadership of the state and people like Senator Shelby, it surpassed us a few years ago in container traffic. Atlanta is just two dusty railroads connecting up in the corner of the state. But through really smart leadership, through really smart politics, they were able to land and build the busiest airport in the world. So, yeah. If you rest on your laurels, others are going to surpass you. And I think we finally have that message, and now we're leaning forward, which is great to see.
All right, let's pivot to health scores in rural areas. It's a challenge not only in Louisiana but across the country.
Yeah, it's a real problem in rural areas. This is a federal program. It's called the Rural Health Transformation Program. And basically what it's doing is it's looking at organizations or companies that are helping with rural tech innovation, who are deploying digital health tools like remote visits, who are doing things in preventative care, because, of course, that's really how you save lives, is by preventing disease, doing things in workforce development, doing things in sustainable access. And we now have $20 million to deploy, and with grantees that are going to get up to $250,000 in order to do things in access and workforce and tech in rural health. So if anybody has a company that's interested, they can go to the Louisiana Economic Development website, or they can just Google Rural Health Transformation Program, and they should apply. Applications opened a few days ago.
And our fortified roof program gets a little assistance from the state legislature, more money appropriated there as well, moving some monies around, I think, is part of what they did. But nonetheless, the more fortified roofs we can have, the better off we will all be.
Folks should go to the Louisiana Department of Insurance website, and if you're thinking about replacing your roof, you should apply for one of these grants of up to $10,000. You have nothing to lose except your insurance payment, so go for it. And now under the new law in Louisiana, insurers are going to have to give a mandated or a clear reduction in the insurance. So, yeah, I encourage everybody to go and apply. I think there'll be up to 3,000 grants under the new program, so they are limited. But take your chance and see if you can get some cash to make your roof stronger.
Michael, you just mentioned Dakar NOLA. They had North America's 50 Best Restaurants ceremony, and we had three restaurants that were mentioned in the top 50.
Yeah, so we had Dakar at number 4, Emeralds at number 20, Akamaya in Bywater down at number 30. And so, first of all, just congratulations to all of them. Obviously great success. We know about EJ. I got the two Michelin stars not too long ago over at Emeralds. But it's also a bit absurd. It's kind of, I was having a debate with two friends about the top 10 hip hop rappers from New York City of all time, and it's an impossible task. Like the top restaurants in Louisiana or in New Orleans, you could you know, basically blindfold yourself and throw a dart, and you're going to hit a restaurant here that's better than most restaurants in any other city, including, frankly, our fast food, including our gas station food. So, but it's nice, and I think what's good about these awards and recognition is that I think it's elevating the way we're seen for our food. It's you know, we have wonderful Cajun, we have wonderful traditional Creole, but it's nice to see a restaurant like Dakar, which is African and which is Senegalese, be elevated as well. I think it broadens our brand a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it really does. And as we, I had the lieutenant governor on earlier, and we were talking about international travel, and the national tourism folks are saying that in 28, 29, and 30, they believe that there's going to be this huge resurgence of international travel. Of course, that might rely on us resolving this Middle East crisis before then, right. But be that as it may, these are the types of things that kind of set the landscape for us to be able to market ourselves and separate ourselves from other cities across the country.
Yeah, that's right. It's all accretive. And I think what you're going to see is that there's going to be a reaction against AI slop, which manifests itself in everything from being from too much information to Drake putting out too many records at once to everything kind of feeling synthetic. That places that are, I'm sorry, I can't, you know, I got to get in my dig on Drake. He's just not that great. And so places that are authentic, places that are human, I think are going to be held in ever more esteem. And so I think that New Orleans, which is, I think, probably the most human city in America, stands to do very well going forward for people that want authentic culture, authentic food. And as long as we continue to work on the other elements of it, mitigating the downside with infrastructure, our crime rate is down, I think, 75% versus in 2022. Keep improving on that. We should see that 19 million number in tourism, you know, just break the 20 million and go through the roof.
Yeah. What was that term you use? AI slop?
AI slop is actually a technical term now, I think, for just the volume of information that is put out, which is not particularly high quality, but is just vast in quantity. And so I've heard people talk about Drake and say he's now entered his slop era. And I just like saying that. It just makes me feel a little bit warm inside. Hey, here's for something completely different. You know that the center for the Knicks who are playing tonight against Wembanyama and the Spurs, that he's from Chalmette? I didn't know
yes.
that.
Yes.
Fantastic, man. Mitchell Robinson.
Yep. I had that conversation at the coffee club this morning. Tonight's game one, and it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Actually, it's probably one of the only things that has really turned a lot of New York voters on about Mamdani is that he's actually a huge Knicks fan.
Let me put it this way. Mamdani, whatever you think about his ideology, he's a really good political athlete. Like he gets it.
Oh yeah.
And so like the fact that he's a Knicks fan,
I don't know that he gets it, but he does it. Let's put it that way.
Well, he does it, right. And he knows that like being a Knicks fan, that is a way to look, when I grew up in New York, it was back in the Patrick Ewing era. I mean, that was the last time that they were any good. So now that they're kind of shockingly in the finals and they're super hot, they've got some other people on the team that I love. They've got Jose Alvarado mm-hmm. is on the team now. Always loved Jose. A few other folks who used to play with the Pelicans. It's going to be fun. But, man, like when Wembanyama is on his game, it's mm-hmm. it's surreal. He moves like a point guard. His body yeah. control is incredible. And what does he clock in at? 7'6"?
Is that how tall he is?
I don't. He's tall. Let me put it this way: he's tall.
All I know, there's no
New
one
Orleans
close.
Charles, right?
He's yeah. a big.
But I guess. Okay. All right. Is it time for a commercial break?
Yeah. Let's pull the plug on this one and let's get to a break. We're visiting with Michael Hack, President and CEO of GNO Inc. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. See, I think that was a much better choice than we built this city on rock and roll, because we need the money.
Yeah.
That's what economic development's all about, right?
Economic development is about being able to have nice things. That's right. So, look, with the help of my trusty friend Claude, it's all become clear. Claude and my friend John in St. Bernard, who just texted me. So the answer is that Grace Slick, she's the through line on all of it, but it was originally Jefferson Airplane in the 60s and 70s out in San Francisco. They
right.
became Jefferson Starship in the sure. 70s. And then after Paul Kantner left, but Grace Slick stayed on, they dropped Jefferson and it just became Starship. And so
Starship.
That is the
okay.
evolutionary chain, the syllogism of Starship.
And that's not AI slop.
This was like actually AI proving itself useful. There are some use cases, and I find that like radio trivia is one of them.
All right, we have some special guests, and I guess I'll let you introduce them at the risk of ruining their reputations. Take it away.
No. In terms of our first guest, he's quite capable of doing that himself. Todd Murphy, he is Chief Operating Officer at M Wealth Advisors. Raymond James, he's also our policy chair and a great friend of Jefferson and the region. And he's going to be joined by Jasmine Brown DeRussell, who is, of course, the Chief External Affairs Officer at GNO Inc. and leads all of our policy efforts.
Todd's a good friend, known him for many, many years. Todd Murphy, welcome to the show. Jasmine, you as well. Thank you so much, Jasmine Brown. Welcome to the show as well. Let's talk about the legislative session, some of the positive things that came out relative to economic development in our state.
Well, thank you, Noel. Glad to be here. It's always hard to follow Michael Hack. But I did learn something new today, that slop is a technical term. So it's always a learning experience.
Always an opportunity to be able to learn.
The legislative session was really, I think, you know, a big hit for business. And it really is a testament to Michael and Jasmine and the team there at GNO Inc. and just the wonderful job they do. It's, you know, here we have a regional organization that's working for the entire state. To improve the business climate across the state, and I just don't know of another organization that's as relevant statewide as GNO Inc. is. And we had some big wins, and I guess, you know, I'll start with the State Infrastructure Bank. I think what we did in this session is really reestablish LED. So the Louisiana Economic Development Department, like every department, has sunset laws, and the legislature has to renew those departments. So that happened. So, you know, kind of in one step, we keep the engine going, and then we fine-tuned it a little bit in giving them some flexibility, some business certainty. I think companies and investors want to know that they can continue without interruption. So, the flexibility came in giving LED the ability to increase and restructure some fees for LED programs. To authorize some new fees tied to administrative cost, and perhaps waive or reduce some fees for small businesses under the hardship bill. So, really, just great sustainability, I think, for LED, which is in lockstep with GNO Inc. in terms of the initiatives and the priorities that we're trying to establish for the state.
And. I think this high-impact jobs program and some other funds that were allocated into different programs that are come under LED, are going to be big difference makers, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think when you look at the high-impact jobs program, this is a program that is not just about, you know, creating some jobs, but it's got to be tied to wages, and it's got to be new full-time jobs, not seasonal jobs. And so I think what you're going to see there is you know, not just looking at headcounts, but what kind of high-end wage jobs can we create? And tied into that is the site development fund. So, you know, and that's where, I mean, you look at the Meta site in North Louisiana, that's how we got that, was through the site development fund. So this adds money to that, so that we can have shovel-ready land ready to go. And uses are Meta sites, of course, but also roads, utilities, rail. It can be used for land acquisition and clearing and the like. So really gives us a competitive advantage when we're looking at southern states and how do we go about bringing in those new companies and the new high-paying jobs.
And underscoring here, Newell, if I may,
Go ahead, Jasmine.
Sarah Murphy has done a fantastic job in reminding our listeners that these programs were actually created in a prior session. This session was really all about, as the chair said, making sure that we have the funding to be able to further these programs. That site development fund has already reigned to be successful. $150 million were originally seeded into that fund at the inception of this program. And so LED came back alongside of their partners and said, hey, we've already divvied that money up across the state. More than 19 sites have received funding across 16 parishes. Out of those 19 sites, five within the GNO region specifically have already received funding from that. And so we're really, from a legislative session perspective, excited about the legislature, the governor, the agencies being in alignment about funding economic development. So a positive session, certainly, for our priorities there.
Absolutely. And Jasmine, I'll just add to that. I think it's been exciting to see parishes and economic development organizations across the state competing for these dollars, which was what we wanted to see, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Michael, I know that you and I have talked about this as well before. The number of projects and the number of parishes involved, I don't know that we've ever had this situation occur simultaneously, that's not the right way to say it, all at once, and the impact that we've had across the state in so many different parishes.
No, this is, I mean, unprecedented is an overused term, but here it's accurate. It actually is completely accurate as compared to the earlier things I said. The scale of the investment around the state is a magnitude greater than it's ever happened before.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. Let's talk about carbon capture. This has kind of taken on a life of... And I haven't been able to really put my finger on the objections and this and that going back and forth, or the science. How did we fare out in this legislative session?
Another positive new out of this session is that alongside of partners, GNO Inc., again, aligned with LaMoga, LCA, LABEAM, and the legislature, were able to defeat over 20 anti-CCS measures. To your point, over the past year and a half, we have seen an increased kind of sector, if you will, of opposition to CCS. A lot of it, we believe, is rooted in miseducation and really not having a full understanding of the technology. And at the start of this session, leadership said, hey, we don't want to continue to relitigate this every session. Everyone has the ability, of course, to file their bills that represent their districts and their constituents, but this is not something that we want to continue to relitigate every single session. And the outcome of that standard that was set at the top of this session really held true, which is not always the case as things often shift within the building of the Capitol. But relative to defeating these anti-CCS measures that would have done a range of things, if we're talking establishing a local election before a CCS project, you know, essentially eliminating expropriation opportunities for Class 6 wells, unlike any other wells, as well as establishing or limiting, if you will, the ability for industry to operate as other energy sectors do. So there's been a fair share of discussion about this, and thankfully at the end of this session, we are able to say that the legislature stood hold once again in making sure that Louisiana remains a state that's open for all of the above from an energy perspective to continue to lead in this space.
You know, when you have to relitigate this every legislative session, it's the epitome, you know, from my perspective, of one step forward, two steps back, right? You always feel like you're losing ground.
Absolutely. You know, Newell, that's a great point, because as we always reiterate, the damage that this does from a narrative perspective is sometimes unquantifiable, right? And so if we're continuing to tell the world that this is something that we have to continue to relitigate from an economic development perspective, that's not always positive. But we are really grateful to have leaders who understand that and who have acted accordingly.
And as Jasmine said, I was just going to add, Newell, as Jasmine said, on this one you had industry partners all united, chemical, oil and gas, business organizations, you know, really just saying, look, this is the right thing for industry. And so from that perspective, it really was a big win.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about the aerospace industry. What went on in this session to help promote and move that forward?
Well, aerospace, as we know, is really a foundational sector for our region and really the state, and that prominence is ever growing. And I think that our state, particularly LED, recognizes the opportunity that we have always had, but also that has continued to evolve. And so as a result, there was a package of about nine bills that were brought forth and championed by LED, as well as regional economic development organizations like GNO Inc. and across the state, to further solidify Louisiana as a competitive site for aerospace-related activities. And so some of those bills included the opportunity to expand ITEP to aerospace manufacturing, as well as establishing a sales and tax use rebate for aerospace equipment, as well as adding aerospace facilities to the statutory definition of critical infrastructure. So a good mix of incentives and regulatory protections that will continue to make sure that we are competitive to other states relative to securing future projects.
And I think one of the exciting impetuses of this was the Artemis rocket, you know, and so many of those parts were made out at Michoud. It's like, how do we expand on that? I think we had six or eight parts, including the rocket booster and the main component that I think I would want to have if I were on a rocket would be the abort system. That was all manufactured right here at Michoud. And so, you know, how do we take this and fine tune our policy so that we're attracting more of that business here to our region?
This is a question just out of curiosity, because I'm ignorant of the fact. Who is our primary competitor? I mean, who are the competitors that we're really competing against for this business? What geographic locations?
Yeah, when you look across the coast, I would say Alabama for sure. What they've done at Huntsville is something that continues to grow, and there's a lot of state investment happening when we're thinking about stimulus. Also in Virginia, but I think in our immediate locale, Alabama stands to be one of the greatest competitors.
Okay, just kind of curious.
Well, folks,
go ahead.
Alabama.
Same suspect. Same suspect. Different silo, same suspect. Todd Murphy, Jasmine Brown, thank you so much for joining us. We truly appreciate it. Got to get to a break. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We'll be right back with Michael's final thoughts. Stay with us.